It was the spring of 1970. Don't work too hard in the arithmetic, but that was my adolescence. And I was fascinated with rock and roll, and with girls, and with cars. I could spot a Mustang or a Camaro blocks and blocks away. I think I could smell a Dodge Charger, you know? But it was also the time in my life when I attended my first funeral. It was my grandfather, my dad's dad. Funerals in so many ways were different in those days, maybe you remember. We all started off there in the funeral home, not the church, but there in a place where we were all gathered and there was music and talking and such. But what I remember is what came after that, right? Do you remember what? The procession. Somehow there were two guys in black suits that could take my grandpa's casket and roll that into the back of a great big car. And there my dad and my two uncles, Bruce and Dick, and then my older cousin, Michael, and I don't know how he got the job instead of me, but they were the ones to pick up Grandpa's big box and put that into the back of the car. They loaded it into a hearse that I noticed was a Cadillac. And then came another car right after that, an even bigger car, that was also a Cadillac, and I suppose that it was probably the fanciest car that there ever was. It had an extra row of seats that were all cushy. It had cup holders. I mean, this was a fancy, fancy machine. We arrived at the cemetery in what seemed like a long line of cars, including our old boring four-door 65 Fairlane. There were flowers there, and there was sunshine. They made us gather under one of those green awnings. My grandmother sat down in the front between my Aunt Pat and my Aunt Susie, who was my favorite. And I stood by my dad. In fact, right in front of my dad, I could feel his warm hands on my shoulders as we were there. It was my first funeral, and everything seemed so novel and so interesting. I remember thinking that, well, I'm going to remember this someday, so I better act right. I better do what I'm supposed to do. Grandma didn't cry, but my Aunt Pat and my Aunt Susie, both of them did. And then I could hear behind me my dad. I heard this kind of sniffling sound, and I wondered, was my dad crying? And that's when it happened. There was this thunderous sneeze, a voluminous and explosive sneeze right behind my left shoulder. And out came his hanky, and I wondered what was left of that sneeze on my neck and on my back. But Pastor Anderson didn't miss a beat. I liked Pastor Anderson. He was different from Pastor Ricky. He was, I don't know, quieter, warmer, somehow easier and calmer, more reassuring and less scary. Pastor Anderson, he talked about God and stuff. He didn't know my grandpa. He didn't know my dad's dad. In fact, I don't think my dad's dad ever went to church. He was notorious for avoiding church. I suppose that he assumed that guys who cussed, like he did, I suppose he assumed that guys who smoked, like he did. I suppose that he assumed that guys who drank liquor like he did, well, they weren't supposed to go to church. Pastor Anderson looked at me and said, "Amen." And then those two guys in black suits pushed a button and my grandfather's casket began to lower into the ground. I never did cry at my grandfather's death. I guess it wouldn't have seemed honest. We weren't close after all. I didn't really know him, and I'm not sure that he really knew me. He really just scared me a little bit. He was young, and I was young. There would be other funerals after that one where it was a very different feeling, where there were tears. Other funerals that would come along after that when I wished beyond wishing that this one wasn't dead. Resurrection. What is that anyway? Funerals have changed over the years. And sometimes now when I wear this, or when I'm preparing with a family for a service, for some kind of a memorial, I hear them say things like, you know, we don't want this to be sad. We don't want this to be a downer. We want for this to be a celebration of life. And I look at them and I say, well, of course you do. Of course you do. Funerals have changed. Are they better? I don't know. The ancient city of Nain was just south of Nazareth. It was on the west side of the Sea of Galilee. Luke calls it a town. Probably a small community, one with its own funeral traditions. And it's at that place that Jesus arrives, as if unexpectedly, as if unannounced or even unattended, intended. He comes upon there a large crowd. It's a procession. No big black Cadillacs. No, just a long line of wailing people. Comes upon them, and there's no hearse, but there is a bier or what, a pallet, some means of conveyance, some way that what the men of the village would have carried the dead one, carried them out beyond the gate, out past the city, carried him out where the dead man was an only son of a widow. The dead man was an only son of a widow. There's no names in the text. No name for the man, no name for the woman. In fact, Luke tells us just enough to let us realize that this woman is now in serious trouble. Why? Because she's a widow. And as a widow, as one with no husband, there goes protection. There goes income. There goes status. All she really has is her body. And how much can she get for that? And now it's worse, because why? And now her son, her only son, is gone. A nameless woman, one defined only in terms of her relationships with men. She's stripped of her place. No protection, no agency. We would say that in some way she was dehumanized. She's no longer a person, a thing, an object. I think she had become invisible. Now there's two signs in the text, two great and remarkable expressions of the power of God in the text. The first one's obvious, right? What is the big miracle in the story? Jesus speaks to the dead man, and he rises from the dead. That's a pretty big deal. Never seen a funeral quite like that. Now, it's also true that someday this man would die again, but still, wow. But did you catch the second sign, the one that's maybe less obvious? I'll read it. As he approached the gates of the town, a man who had died was being carried out. He was his mother's only son, and she was a widow, and with her was the crowd. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion for her. When the Lord saw her, saw this invisible woman, saw this one of no account, of no value. This one who was without worth. Is Jesus still seeing us? I suppose we could look around. We could turn the lights back up bright again, and you could look around the room. Maybe you'd see people that you hadn't noticed before. Oh, thank you. Garth is fast on the draw there. Sometimes I see people I don't want to see. There are people I don't want to see, especially those two or three guys that like to find their way. Somehow, usually over the weekend, they find their way under the eaves here behind the church, and they make a little camp And maybe you know this, but when you use heroin, you very quickly have to go. So they do. Or the guys that like to hang out somehow down below the ravine over by the recycle station, where I find hypodermics. Those are ones that are hard for me to see sometimes. Maybe you're thinking about that too. Someone makes it hard for you to look. Someone who makes you mad or nervous. Someone who's different, culturally different or politically different or racially different or sexually different or culturally different. I mean, how? Jesus raises us from the dead, and Jesus opens our eyes. I love the last line of Luke's account of this. The dead man sat up and began to speak. Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized all of them, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has risen among us." And here it is. Here's the next thing they say. God has looked favorably on people. Is God still looking and seeing and watching and loving and forgiving and still raising us all from the dead? Amen.